how did this fascination with Star Trek begin for you?
Oh, you know, and people that know me really well know that this goes back way to my earliest childhood days. I actually remember watching Star Trek during its very first season on the air, and it would have been 1966, 67. And I was over at my grandparents', and my uncle had it on, and it was an episode I remember called The Corbomite Maneuver. And it included this
You
creature.
Remember that.
I do. And I was probably about 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old. And it had this particular creature on it, and it scared the willies out of me. It was just, you know, so frightening. I remember hiding my face in the couch. So I didn't touch Star Trek again for about 3 or 4 years. And when it went into syndication after the series had been canceled right around 1970, I was a little older, a little more mature, 9 or 10, and really
that's up
caught
there.
A little bit. And that caught the fever then.
Yeah.
And really began to, Star Trek really began to encourage me as a, you know, games I played in the backyard.
Mm.
And as I got a little bit older, when, you know, maybe it's a little bit weird to run around with a cardboard and masking tape communicator and uniforms and such, I started writing these adventures. So it really is kind of the heart of helping to create me as a writer.
Already then.
Yeah, all the way back then, yeah. I still have, in fact, I came across not long ago a handwritten story that I did when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old.
Oh, I love it. Could you use any of those ideas today?
I would be ashamed to show it to anybody. It was illustrated, too, and I just reaffirmed the fact that I am not an artist, ever was, but and greater respect for those that can. So.
So is it fair to call you a Trekkie?
It is, actually. There was a time when that word kind of fell out of favor, but I think Trek fans have decided that it's sort of a badge of honor now.
And for the three people out there who don't know what Star Trek is about, can you give us a synopsis of what this show is?
Sure. So Star Trek was created by a television writer and producer named Gene Roddenberry in the mid-1960s, and he sort of envisioned this as a wagon train to the stars. He wanted to do something that was different from some of the science fiction at the time that was on television and in films with lots of, you know, flying saucers and bug-eyed monsters and zap guns and that sort of thing. And he really wanted to tell human stories. And so that's what Star Trek became. And Roddenberry was very much about social issues at the time. And so he was able to work things in like racism and gender discrimination and war and all those kinds of things that were hot button issues as much in the 60s as they are today into stories. And the beauty about science fiction is it sort of can catch you off guard. It can get you thinking differently about some of those issues. Than if you just were to, you know, hit it straightforward.
It's interesting that you say about the social issues, because when we think of science fiction, we might think of something completely different, but it can still be a platform, like you said, for today's issues. And when I watched one of your, and they're available on YouTube, I watched one of these episodes, and you did talk about gender issues, and that was interesting.
Absolutely. And so Star Trek ended up running about 3 seasons. And was canceled by NBC TV in 1969. So the adventures of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy and the Starship Enterprise kind of went into what they call the wilderness years in the 70s, where there wasn't much going on. There was an animated series to this day, if I remember correctly, is the only Emmy Award that Star Trek has ever won for dramatic presentation was from the animated series, a Saturday morning series back in the 70s. But there was enough interest in it, and in 1979, the first Star Trek film kicked off. That started a whole film franchise. There were several then TV spinoffs, Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Enterprise.
And you just rattle those off.
It is a little disturbing that I know that quite that well. So, but a real phenomenon. It's really become part of our, you know, sort of 20th century culture. Star Trek, if you say Star Trek, much as if you say Star Wars today, people will know what you're talking about.
And how much has it traveled to other worlds, meaning Europe and some of these other countries? Are they into Star Trek too, or is it just an American thing?
Probably it's stronger American than any other nation, but Star Trek is indeed worldwide because the messages were global in nature. It was really about stories and issues. And Star Trek has always been willing to do that. Even these now independent or fan-produced versions of Star Trek are all hitting on some of those issues that are relevant.
So this must have been a childhood dream come true that today you're a script writer. So tell us, how did that happen? How were you able to get this job as a script writer for Star Trek?
Well, so the series I write for is Star Trek New Voyages. It was launched, the first episode was launched in 2004. It was a creation by a gentleman named James Cawley, who was, much like me, a Star Trek fan going back to his earliest days. And he really felt, while, you know, he enjoyed the spinoffs and the films to varying degrees, he felt that there was an opportunity to recreate that original series and the power of it, because so many of the things it dealt with are still relevant in our society. And so he did. Right down to a faithful recreation of the sets, casting actors that could portray those characters in a real meaningful way, and really create the series and have it resonate with fans. So I found out about it probably around 2007, 2008, and thought, oh, that's really cool. It never occurred to me that I might have an opportunity to pitch a story, but I did. In 2010, I encountered one of their producers, had an opportunity to pitch a story, and James Cawley contacted me. In fact, I was on a trip up at Mackinac Island, a business trip, and I got a phone call from him, and I always remember that, sitting out there at Mackinac Island, taking notes from him on the treatment that I had done for that episode.
So how is that different? Because you've got a background in PR, you're a journalist, you've written a novel, and now script writing. How does this type of writing differ?
From some of the novel writing and short story writing, in some ways, it's almost hard to answer that question in my mind, because in some ways there isn't a lot of difference, and in some ways there's tons of difference. One of the things that's helped me is the fact that I grew up as a kid watching a lot of television. Way more than my mother would have wanted me to.
But, so there's a good thing about watching television.
Well, I think so, because I began to get sort of that sense of structure of television shows and a sense of dialogue. I've been told on a number of occasions on some of the, like in my novel and my short stories, that I seem to have dialogue down really well. So, and I've written corporate scripts in my corporate PR life and so forth. But this was a real opportunity to kind of really write for television. And I will say it was both easy to do, because that sort of television structure in some way, shape, or form kind of fits into my stories and into my novel. But it was also very hard, because it is very different. You really got to get a sense for people's voices and how they speak and how they say certain words. And both as the actor portraying the character and the character itself, but just as human beings.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time when I write scripts going back and reading them out loud and going, oh, you know, a real person would never say that, or Kirk would never say that, or, you know, and making adjustments. It's getting a little bit easier as I've done a number of them now, but that first one especially was a real challenge.
So what was that like? I understand you were there for some of the readings and the shootings?
Yes, the filming, yes. Though that's kind of an archaic term, but we still use it. So.
Yeah. So what was that like? You got to participate directly in some of that, didn't you?
Well, let me tell you, I did. I've written now 4 episodes and been at the filming for 3 of them.
Okay.
And I will tell you about the very first one. This was in the summer of 2012. And the producers of Star Trek New Voyages very graciously invited me to be there for the filming. So I was there. And I remembered that first couple of scenes where I'm sitting next to the director and having characters deliver lines that I wrote and I envisioned, sometimes different from how they would deliver it differently from how I might have envisioned it, but always better. And at one point, I even got kind of misty-eyed. It's like, who would have thought that I would get to write an episode of a series that was canceled 40 years earlier?
Yeah.
And was such an inspiration for me.
And where have people been able to see them? You've been at Alamo Drafthouse, and where can they still see them?
So Star Trek New Voyages is available a couple of different ways. It's available to download from their website, StarTrekNewVoyages.com. And but they also post them on YouTube, which is where I think the majority of people probably end up watching them. The most recent episode, which actually, although it was my third, it was the first one to get released formally, I just checked yesterday, was well over 90,000 views. So that's pretty exciting. And it was a fun story.
And, you know, when I watched it, it was a certain quaintness, because I watched Star Trek II, believe it or not, when I was
Excellent.
A kid. And some of those, the background sets, they were kind of quaint in a way. They're supposed to be futuristic, but they chose to keep them that way rather than update them with our ideas of the future today.
And that's one of the, I think, the real strengths of Star Trek New Voyages. James Cawley actually has a lot of Hollywood connections, Hollywood ties. He worked for in the production crew for Star Trek The Next Generation in the costuming area. But he has a real strong sense for the original sets. And he's gotten the original blueprints from when they were first built at Desilu Studios in the 1960s. And in the studio for Retrofilm Studios, where we filmed the series, he is actually in the process of recreating every single one of those sets absolutely faithfully to the old show. There's a story where there was another independent film production that used their sets a few years back. And Nichelle Nichols, who played Lieutenant Uhura on the original series, had a role in this other production. She came in and she walked into the set and looked around and gasped and said, "It's like being back in the original." So it's that faithful. And James is a real stickler for that, and good for him. The show is better because of it.
Well, you know, when I watched one of your episodes, Rick, it struck something nostalgic. Just some of the sounds, like the door opening, there's a specific sound to that.
Yes.
The way that suction of, yeah. and it was brought me back to my childhood, too. And while we're talking about science fiction, tell us a little bit more about Radiance, your novel.
Radiance, a novel that I published in 2010. And it's a story about... two strangers searching for this thing called the Radiance and what the long-term implications for humanity are as a result of that. That story is, a lot of it is informed by my faith. Being a Christian, my faith informs a lot of my own writing. At the same time, it's not a religious tract. I don't really write all religious stories or anything like that. But there's a very strong bent to the issue of human spirituality and where we are and how we need to consider those things.
And I understand that on the Star Trek work, you all work for free. Is that true?
Well, so the one of the stipulations that that go with these fan-based or independent film productions, CBS, which owns the television and online rights for Star Trek, is aware that these productions are going on. And actually, I give them great props because in a lot of other franchises, I think it would be a temptation to say, well, if anyone's going to do this stuff, it's going to be us, and we're not going to allow these kinds of things to happen. But CBS, in their infinite wisdom, looked at all of these independent productions and said, you know, this only sort of supports the franchise that we own, and we think we can encourage it. There's a lot of creativity out there that people are creating these with great reverence to the original. And so they support it. But one of the stipulations is you can't make it a for-profit business. So all of these independent productions are actually done through fan support.
So you have a Kickstarter campaign out there where people can get involved?
That's right. In this day and age, there are all sorts of tools to be able to make that happen. And Kickstarter is one of the latest tools that New Voyages is using. In fact, there's a campaign going on right now. It will help raise the money to film the episode that I've written that's being filmed this summer. The title is Torment of Destiny, pretty excited about that. And then also finish off the sets. They're actually building the original engineering set, and I've been looking at some of the progress they're making on that. They post some stuff on Facebook, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So. Torment of Destiny.
Torment of Destiny.
And will that be available for viewers in Kalamazoo?
Yes, we'll have, again, like the other episodes, it will be available for download and also posted on YouTube whenever it gets finished. Obviously, filming comes up, and then there will be a lot of post-production work that goes into that. So
what worlds will Rick Chambers explore next?
Well, I never in my wildest dreams thought I would write one episode of Star Trek. I've now had the privilege of writing four. And one of them, the last episode that was released, Mindsifter, the little story behind that, it appeared in the first published book of Star Trek short stories back in the 1970s. I did the teleplay for this. I did not write the original story. It was written by a woman named Shirley Mayuski back in the mid 70s. And it's an amazing story. I remember buying that book when I was a kid and loving that story. And so when the producers called and said, we want you to do the script. We have permission from Shirley's estate to do this. I was just so touched. And there's a lot of personal heart in that episode. I will say this. There's a funeral scene, a memorial scene in that episode. And when I wrote that scene, my mother was dying at the time. And so if anyone watches that scene and listens to the words, that had a lot of meaning for me at that time. And it was made all the more powerful by the amazing performances. Jeff Bond is Dr. McCoy, who does the eulogy in that scene, singing by the Uhura character and so forth, and just the acting. We've got Brian Gross as Captain Kirk, Brandon Stacey as Mr. Spock. Those guys are just incredibly talented. All of them are talented. It's a real privilege to be part of this production.